How are you? Welcome to the Entrepreneur Experiment Podcast with me, Gary Fox. Today, my guest is the world famous Paul Hayes. This is a masterclass in storytelling and finding your purpose in life. Here's my chat with Paul.
Paul, welcome to the pod.
Thanks, Gary.
Honestly, I'm not even sure where to start.
Sure. As North Tipperary men, why don't we start at the beginning?
We'll start at the beginning and work our way forward. We had such an Irish conversation. It's like, Paul, part of Tip. This part, my granny was 2 miles away from there. It turns out your granny lived 2 miles from where I grew up.
Yeah, somewhere standard. Between Ballinware and Ardcrony there. Yeah.
Solid part of the world.
Yeah. No, that was my granddad. Sorry. My granny was over the other side, Silver Mines in Dala. But, you know, anywhere around Nina, I think there's crack to be had anywhere about 5 miles outside Nina.
Yeah. Don't want to go further than 5 miles.
I wouldn't go. Like, once you hit the lake, stop.
Strange things happen in the mountains up
yes,
there.
Yes, they do.
So you are Tipman originally?
I am Thurles, the square in Thurles, Hayes's, not Hayes's Hotel. I grew up in a pub about 10 doors up from it called the Arch Bar and also called Hayes's, confusingly. And my formative years were spent. I was born at an early age and it's kind of, I'll do anything for Tip now, except live there.
I was going to say, except go back to the native roots. Do you go back much?
I do. I go back a lot because my mum and dad are still living over the pub. My brother runs it and all my nieces and sister-in-law, they have a great restaurant there. And I'm just drawn back to it. And I think it's great for my own kids to go down. In fact, my son is there right now for his Easter holidays. He's working in the pub. He's, you know, learning about customer service at the coalface. Because I really do think it is formative to be in a customer-facing position as quick and as often as you can, as early as you can in life.
Especially now when everything is kind of a bit removed. A lot of stuff, they're grown up in a world of kind of like screens and a lot of kind of, even a lot of the jobs might be remote.
Yeah.
Whereas to actually get that customer service, that communication skills.
Yeah.
I was talking to someone yesterday about the secondary level education and like so much is missing from that, like life skills, communication skills, cooking, personal finance, just normal skills to live.
I remember as a 14-year-old and you're collecting glasses and you see all of life, good and bad.
Yes.
You see people that want to talk, you see people that don't want to talk, you see people that might need a lift, you see people and how they are at their best and how they are at their worst. You see people when they're entertaining and they're surrounded by friends, and you see people who might be a bit down, or you see people that might be a bit drunk and angry. And just figuring out, without being able to verbalize it, you know, just how they are, and if you can help, you can, and if you can't help, you back away. You can't, as they say, book learn those skills. So I think exposure to that is actually probably the most important thing I had at an early age. And then it's a great restaurant now, to give it a plug, in Thurles, De Fuita's upstairs. But when I was growing up, it was the meeting rooms. And we were the Fianna Fáil Common House. So we had ministers in every Saturday for their clinics. And then we had meetings every night. And I was going around emptying ashtrays, the old scallop tray ashtrays, if you remember them. That's how old I am. And it was amazing to be the fly on the wall at the back of, you know, not just the IFA, but the ICMSA and the BVA and the subsections of the farmers' associations and the unions. We were a sugar factory town. And just seeing the politics up close and the debating up close, I really think it gave me a kind of an interesting, and I didn't realize at the time, you only understand life backwards. You never, understand it forwards. But my real formative years were between about 14 and 18, both in the pub and out and around Tipperary, everything I've learned. And I don't mean to be twee about that, because I've now seen it that, whatever skills I have, I learned then. And so I hope for my own kids and for many others that they don't miss those formative experiences and that they get too isolated, because it's amazing. The whole world is now available to you, but it's also probably available to you in too fast a torrent and not in a graduated way, and you're not learning as much. You're kind of more passive about it as opposed to being in it.
You're a spectator, and you learn nothing you learn a little as a spectator. Yeah. I think it's like you learn 10% of what you do as a practitioner. And there's something interesting there. You said, like, is it a paradox of choice now? Because they can do anything, but when you can do anything, you just kind of get frozen in that choice thing whereby, I don't want to make the wrong mistake, and they do nothing.
It's paralyzing. And I mean, as a 50-year-old man, 50 something, I find social media difficult, and I'm trying to cleanse myself off various platforms. I just don't know what it is like for 14 or 15-year-olds now.
That's the thing. So my daughter's only like 16 months, but I do flash forward every now and again to like 9, 10. What will it be like for her? And I do see kind of kids of that age. I'm kind of going, because you can't be the man shouting at the sky.
No.
Oh, it was better in my day. Yeah. You can't, because that's not true, right? Mm. But I just wonder, I just don't know if social media is the toxic abuse or this toxic thing. Have we just not learned how to harness it? Will people who grew up with it natively have a more healthy relationship with it? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, look, we can go back and shout at the Iron Horse when they invented the trains as well. But there is a, when you're in the early stages of something and it is unregulated and it is the Wild West by necessity, because no, it hasn't settled yet. You know, all new technologies, and they just kind of form and deform and some work and some don't. You can't quite get your head around what they are. It's too amorphous. It's too, you know, it's almost too big a concept to get your head around. I just think the more we can balance people out, and if you can do sports, great. If you can't, or if that's not your thing, you need to find something else that is in IRL, as the kids say. I had my son recently tell me when I was getting het up about something that I was an NPC. And even though I've worked in games for a long time, it had to be explained to me that that was non-playing character. When a 15-year-old tells you that, it really hurts. Like, it hurts.
Yeah, that's deep. Yeah,
but because he was right. That's what really hurt. Yeah. Anyway, the kids will be all right. It's just we need to, figure out.
Need to figure out ourselves first. Figure out ourselves, then we figure out the rest. You said something there about the formative years. Do you think that's what set you down the road to your career? Do you think that's what set you into this love of communication, this love of people, this love of just like being around people?
Yeah, I think I just wanted to lick people's brains. That sounds creepy, but it was, I was always interested in just new people's experiences, where they'd come from. It's funny, my dad is quite elderly now, but he loves the fact that he still lives over the pub because, as he said, it's an ever-changing landscape. He comes down and, you know, serves a few pints, has a few pints, and the landscape keeps changing of people that come in, and he's never bored and he's never lonely. And that actually might be winning at life.
Over the past 5 years in this podcast, I've spoken to loads of amazing Irish business who grew from one idea to become world-class companies able to compete with the very best on the international stage. And many of those started up and grew with the help of their local enterprise office. From starting or growing to becoming more sustainable or digitization, the local enterprise offices have everything to help make it happen for your business. And if there's one thing that entrepreneurs want, aside from more money, it's more time. The local enterprise offices want to give that back. Their supports for competitiveness and productivity can help your business save time, money, and energy. For them, it's all in a day's work. So if you want to give your business the gift of time, decreased costs, and lower electricity bills, then go to allinadayswork.ie, take 2 minutes to fill out the form, and let your local enterprise office handle the rest. If you've been listening for a while, you know Iconic Offices have been my partner for ages now. Working and recording out of their flexible workspaces has meant a huge deal to the success of this podcast. So it made perfect sense to partner up with them again for season 17, but to give you, my fellow entrepreneurs, a unique offer. Come work in the Iconic Office workspaces for free with no catches. Simply visit the link in the description below and enter Gary24 for a free day pass or a free day office pass. Enjoy. So in a couple of weeks on May 21st, I'm hosting the Retail Excellence Ireland Retail Retreat in Dublin. It's Ireland's largest retail conference with speakers such as Michael Corcoran, old friend of mine and ex-head of social at Ryanair, and a special guest I can't reveal, but here's a clue. He recently led Ireland to big success in the rugby field, and he's an expert in managing winning cultures. You can figure that one out. Visit retailexcellence.ie to grab a ticket, and I'll see you there.
There's a lot to that. Like, loneliness is a huge thing. It was actually Deck Ryan that flagged this with me. He goes, loneliness is the next epidemic.
And I
was I hadn't really thought about it. It's kind of like that whole thing, you know, someone talks about a red Ferrari and then you see five of them.
Yeah.
You know, maybe not in Dublin these days, but you know what I mean? It's that psychological phenomenon of you're not aware of it till you're aware of it.
Yeah.
It does seem to be quite prevalent, and it kind of touches on the social media thing we talked about there. But I think that is, I was chatting to a doctor last week and I was just chatting about his life and his business. And he's like, so much of what I do is just talking to people. They've no one to talk to. And he made a really interesting observation. He's like, the decline of the church and decline of like community and broader families living around your family. Mm. He's like, people just have no one to talk to.
Yeah. He's that's like, it. Like that Blue Zone thing on Netflix or whatever. In the end, when you narrow it down from diet to Mediterranean to whatever, a bit of sunshine would do us all.
It would be nice.
A little bit more good. But I do think it's that sense of, either family or friends or mission. You know, the grandmother won't die until the grandkids are taken care of. They've just decided not to. And that sense of purpose, and that purpose doesn't have to be some big highfalutin mission. It just needs to be, I've got either friends or family that need me. I've got something to do, and it's constantly changing and it's constantly interesting, and I've got a role, yes, whatever that is. I mean, I often think my dad in a different time would have been a psychiatrist. He is a psychiatrist, a priest, you know, but even now with the decline of pubs, it's not there for as many people because they're not drinking, you know, as they used to. Maybe it's more restaurant and where it gets to. But in the end, people just want to have that connectivity, yeah, that connection. So I think what keeps him and my mom and, you know, a lot of that generation going is if they're lucky enough to be still in the thick of things and have a constantly, you know, changing audience, both for them and for the people they're talking to, they actually provide a great social service. And I think, going back to your question a few years ago, I think I knew I was going to get into some kind of communications because even on a busy day, you know, a Munster final or a Fela, and Thurles has been blessed with many busy days, I'd be out the front talking to people and just making sure they were good and they were happy. But my father would be looking at me going, you know, the pub is full now. You could just come in and pull some pints. But it just wasn't in me for some reason. Mm. And he said, you're a great PR guy in a quiet day. We just don't need you to be that, you know, on the busy days. So I don't think I was cut out for the pub. Luckily, my brother has a much better predilection for that. And he's running a great stall down there, as they say.
So what, people that don't know you, you run Beachhut PR, among many things. That's why I was like, I don't even know where to start. I met you 4 weeks, 3 weeks ago, maybe, at a conference. And you're like, so yeah, I might be going to Austin and, you know, the Oscars next week. So I might need to, you know, I can't meet you next week. I was like, did you just say the Oscars in Austin? As no, if you were kind of going, yeah, I'm just popping down to Thurles there on the Friday.
Yeah, yeah. Bono told me never to name drop. No, I've never met him. But yeah. I think, you know, it's, you get involved in lots of different interesting things. The thing about PR generally, I mean, you know, apart from the doing of the PR, is you're never 100% responsible for anyone's success or failure, but you can weave yourself in and out of the tapestry of about 15% of lots of different things. So if you can make your peace with that, it's an amazing place to be because you get exposed to and you get to help and you get to learn from some of the most interesting people at that interesting period in their life when they need to accelerate or grow or, you know, where they need to get to. And you just get involved in all sorts of crazy stuff. Now, again, you don't have the ownership entirely, but you get to be entrepreneurially adjacent is the phrase I use quite a bit. And it's a great place to be if you can figure out that that's where you need to be. So,
you know, how did you figure that out?
I'm still figuring it out. You only understand life, I think, in retrospect. But it's the unverbalized. It's things you couldn't even verbalize if you had. It's just that feeling, I can help here. I am interested in helping other people communicate better. I could internalize what someone was trying to say and then externalize it for them to other people to help them, because I work with some of the smartest people I've ever met. But unfortunately, sometimes they have to sell it to be investors or customers or employees that aren't as smart as them. And I don't mean that in a patronizing way. It's that you just have to be able to communicate at different levels to different people. And some of those people are way ahead of you in life, you yep. know. I mean, I have a joke with my son. I shouldn't, before he does his junior cert or whatever, that don't worry, C's with a bit of crack can always hire A's, although it doesn't work out like that the whole time. That's right. I'm a demotivational parent. But I do think, you know, communication needs to be to a lot of stakeholders. So it needs to be to the board, but it also needs to be to the employees. And it also needs to be to the wider public who don't care as much. Perhaps, you know, to you, if you're a technologist or you're an entrepreneur, what you're doing is 7 days a week and it's the only thing that matters to you. To everyone else, it's kind of a, I don't know if I have room in my head for this.
Exactly. I say this all the time to people. I do some teaching. I help some people out, just kind of clarifying their message. And I'm like, no one cares. And I mean this in the very best way. Mm. I said, no one really cares. I said, you care.
Yeah.
This is everything, be all and end all. To them, while they're listening to you, they're thinking about, okay, I wonder if I'm going to pick my daughter up later.
Yeah.
What's for dinner?
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus, I have 10 emails. Like, there's a million things in their head.
Back in the conference day, you know, when you used to have brochures, printed brochures. Bear with me, kids. This wasn't too long ago. That moment where you put someone's brochure in your bag after they've talked to you, that was the moment. And the smile that would come across your face and you'd go, oh, they really like us. And they go, yeah. No, that's the smile of them never having to think about you again, because they've taken your brochure and they're putting you in the bag.
The social transaction
is complete. That was, actually, I think where it really started for me was realizing that people hate conferences. They just love meeting people and having a bit of crack at them and feeling like they were in the after party. So we started doing, I remember when I was in computer games in Havoc and Demonware and a few other kind of middleware computer game technologies, we would kind of do the meta party, which was our fancy way of saying we'll be the party that gets you to the other parties and we won't tie you down. So we would hire silly vehicles in San Francisco and LA and, you know, San Diego, all the West Coast stuff. And we would bring you to the really cool parties, because all we wanted was 45 minutes alone with you with a pint in your hand and a bit of chat, and you weren't even noticing it, and no pressure.
No pressure. It's like when you walk into a place and you're like, it's a big in breath, and you're like, right, who am I going to talk to? Where am I going? Yeah. There's so many decisions when you go to one of those things. Do I know anyone here? What am I going to talk about? Oh, should I address this? Whereas I love that strategy, the middle bit.
Well, it came from failure, because I remember I'd worked in a few different PR agencies, and they were great. And I realize now what I learned there, I've actually been deploying. I've never had an original idea in my head, but I've always had a kind of a 15% better iteration, which I think is more or less life. There are no new ideas, right?
Exactly.
It's just, can you iterate a little bit better just at a tipping point when things might be changing anyway? We built a huge stand at the Game Developer Conference in San Jose. I think it cost $500,000 or maybe $250,000.
Oof.
And that punts, that's how long ago it was. And unfortunately, we put it between the Sony and the Microsoft stand where they were launching Xbox and PlayStation 2.
Oh,
that was a long time ago.
Not a footfall, not a lot of interest.
Yeah, we did not look good. We looked like a favela, you know, compared to it. And nobody came to the stand. And it was the worst mistake I'd ever made. And they should have fired me, but they didn't. God bless them. And the next one was, okay, let's spend $2,000 and hire an RV and park in the car park because we can't even afford tickets to the show. Drink some beers and have some laptops. And it was off the charts successful because people just wanted to be at an angle, askew to the main thing, and have a chat, sit down, not be trapped, but have an interesting discussion that they could get away from the madness of. So I love conferences in the sense that they are, let's all go to the one place, you know, rather than all of us going individually to other places. And it's like the physical manifestation of a press release. Like a press release is just a piece of paper that goes, today, this important thing happened. Why? Because we wrote it down.
Yeah.
And a conference is the same thing. We are going to arbitrarily decide that today this is important that we were. You know, how many times have you heard on the news, speaking at a conference in wherever today? And you go, but you just decided. Well, you needed to, because to go back to your point, there is a fire hose of information. There is way more information than there is attention time for the people you're trying to get to. And so we come up with these artificial moments in time where we decide it is news today and it is not fresh tomorrow. And so I always see the conferences and the press releases as the end of the process, not the start and the end of the process. You want to be able to figure out, who do we need to speak to? And then from first principles, reverse engineer. What is the best way in order to speak to those people, and in what way do they want to take our message? So I think one of the big PR mistakes people make is they go, here's the brochure, internalize it, please. And here's our, you know, I'm going to tell you about our feature benefit list and where you get to. Whereas people want to, well, on two levels, they want a cognitive gap so that they can, you know, two and two and let me make it five. You know, they don't want to just regurgitate what it is you're telling them about how cool you are. It goes back to the pub that I grew up in. You don't want to be the guy that comes in and goes, I'm great, and let me tell you why, because you're like moving your pint off to the side and away from him. It's, this is the way the world is going. This thing is happening and this thing is happening. So I think, what's your opinion on where it might go to? And then you've got something where you're in a discussion. And I know this doesn't sound very insightful, but it's amazing the amount of companies that make the mistake of, well, PR is just me telling them how great we are. And I'm going, it's never that. It's how great can they be? You plus, you know, them plus your product equals where might they go? You know, Apple does this brilliantly. Everyone else that's established does this brilliantly. But nobody's going to share your story unless they can add their own twist to it. You know, like how you actually go viral or how you actually, you know, get your message disseminated in the right way is when people go, let me tell you what these guys are really up to, because this is what's really smart. Beyond this, no one's going to just regurgitate what it is that you're going to try and put in their brain. They need to be able to give it their own twist. So I like that you're only starting a discussion. And a win is that you're in the discussion. It's never that you're the headline, especially if you're a scaling technology company. You want to be in the third paragraph as the arbitrator. You know, just the quote that goes, I think the world's going like this. And, you know, we hope to be there when we get there.
But it's amazing to me, even now in this modern world, where we have so much access to information, so many access experts like you, people still don't get that. It's broadcasting, not conversation.
Yeah.
It's broadcasting. Look, 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 look. And, you know, they kind of go against, they go louder instead of kind of going softer.
It's harder to go softer. What's the old phrase? I would have written you a shorter letter, but I didn't have the time.
Yeah.
You know, it's about thought up front rather than energy spinning mindlessly on a wheel at the end.
I heard a great analogy of this whole process, and it was a guy driving a Maserati down the street. He's driving along and he's like, I am epic. And he's looking out and he sees two people looking at him. He just like raises the eyebrows and they look at him, and in their head they're thinking, how fucking cool would I look driving that Maserati? And that's it.
Yeah.
It's not. You're not looking at that guy going, what a legend. You're looking going, imagine how cool I'd be driving that Maserati. And that is what it comes down. That's what I think marketing and products and press and everything comes down to is the person. What are you going to do for them?
Yep.
What does,
how is this going to make my life better?
Well, how do you improve the future version of themselves?
Yeah.
That's why diets are so popular. That's why gyms. That's why, you know, Apple. The future version of yourself.
Yeah.
Imagine when we go on holidays. Imagine how I'm going to look. Imagine how I'm going to feel. That anticipation.
Yeah. That's it, actually. You should do this.
I really should. Yeah, I'm just thinking, are we team up?
There you go. Now, no, it'd be too powerful.
We've got a break.
It'd be too powerful.
I like the way you kind of like, you broke down some of the mistakes there. Talk to me then, for people listening, for founders listening, how should they be thinking about this? Because we've kind of broken it down. We've kind of given the secrets away already. But break it down a little bit more for me. Like, when, what do your best clients do? Because I've spoken to a lot of your clients.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert. And some of them are just excellent at, and like, some of it's natural, right?
Yep.
You've the Bobby Healy's of the world.
Yep.
They're just incredible people, charismatic, brilliant. But then, you know, what are the key things that you kind of sit them down and go, right, look, here we are. You've kind of said, you know, become in the conversation, don't just become like broadcasting. What are the other key things you sit them down and go, right, here we go?
Yeah, I, you know, they're, everyone's an individual. And some people are great natural communicators and you want to get out of their way. Sometimes you have to stem the flow for quality and become a traffic cop for them. But for those that find it hard to get into the conversation, it's about drawing out that which is interesting. Everybody's got a piece of data, hopefully an anecdote rather than a piece of data, both together.
Exactly.
What's that old phrase? The plural of anecdote isn't data, but as human beings, we think it is. Or is that the other way around? But anyway, I think if we, you know, you want them to get into the conversation, it's table stakes that they know their own business. That's just, you know what that is. You're going to be your own best advocate for that. What you have to become is the expert on your category. Because people want to know, not only are you the best technology or the best breakthrough product at the right time, they want to know where is the whole industry heading? Because they're really buying 3.0 off you when they're buying 1.0.
Okay.
You're going to hold their hand into 2 years' time and 5 years' time. And if you can't outline a credible, you know, here are the parameters under which things are changing and this is why this is going to be huge, you're really not going to convince them. The more you talk about your technology, paradoxically, the more people go, this shit doesn't work. They're too defensive about their own technology.
Yeah.
Whereas if you're talking about where the ball's going to hop in 3 or 5 years' time, credibly, now nobody knows exactly where it's going to hop, but you've got to be able to make an informed outline of where that is and what the who the winners and losers are going to be, what the criteria are. I'm going a bit all over the place, but they...
No, I get excited. It's a story arc.
It's a story arc.
Become the narrative. You're spelling
out.
Don't just talk at me. Tell me a story. That's how humans have learned for thousands of years.
Frame it. Because going back to your thing of information overload, you almost need to frame what is the category you're going into. And then you can actually rise above and knock your competitors out with your elbows gracefully. Because you can go, well, actually, the sector is only going to be convinced of these three or concerned with these three or these five parameters.
Mm.
And because a lot of people don't even know how to categorize you when you're a startup. It's like, what animal is this? Yeah. I don't know. So tell me what farm it's on.
And
talk about the farm.
Everyone tries to be the most unique new thing. And people are like, the worst thing you can do, I think, is make people feel stupid.
Yeah, that's it. And you have to be the smallest component part, but you know where, because it's not credible for you as a startup to boil the ocean or, you know, be able to put your whole arm around the whole world, as they say. You've got to be able to go, we know exactly where the field we're playing in, and we also know how the field is going to change. So we're going to evolve in a way that you're never going to be caught out. You know, this is where it's all going. And also it's the, you know, people are much more comfortable not talking about themselves if they're not, you know, ultimate narcissists. They don't want to be talking about themselves all the time. They want to be talking about where things are going, how the sector is going to develop. And figuring all that out gives people that wouldn't necessarily be the best conversationalists or, you know, the best communicators, it gives them an interesting place to go to. So it's like, put on the white coat. You know, like, you're never going to be invited to the conferences to speak if you just stand up and do an ad. You've got to give people insights under where are things going, how is it going to, who's going to do well, who's not going to do well, what types. And you can get as sharp or as bland as you want with that. It's wherever you're comfortable, but our job is to work that out for you. Mm. And remember that conferences, trade press, PR generally, it's all part of the same ecosystem. You know, you spiral upwards if you become more interesting to a broader set, but then you're broadcasting in order to narrowcast maybe at 100 people or, you know, 500 devs that you need for your first customers and where you're at. But the credibility of PR over and above advertising is that it's gone through the white heat of exposure. So, you know, 1 million people have read it. These guys must be okay. You know, someone would have called them if it was bullshit. They would have called them on it. And so that constantly happening is where credibility keeps coming from. And also we say this, and we would say this as PR consultants, you're your own best PR person, and you may not need us until a certain stage. If you are a great communicator and you get this instinctually, which some people do, you're better off doing it yourself. Sometimes when it comes to a certain scale, you move beyond your initial geographic region or your initial very small sector. You might need a consultancy like us to help you with traffic copping. You know, okay, we're going to do San Francisco next. We're going to do this media market next, or we're going to do this particular sector next, or where you get to. And then some clients come to you going, we actually just need help with how we communicate.
Okay.
And where we, so figuring that out, I have an amazing team who are all much younger than me. And they understand, they can get their fingers down into sectors that I don't even understand anymore. I mean, I started in computer gaming 25, 30 years ago. Is I that old? God, I am. And so I have a general understanding of technology, and I'm here for as a parish priest, a friend of mine said, I'm here for hatches, matches, and dispatches. You know, I'm there at the fundraising, the merger, the sale, or the failure, or the exit, and I'm there for the big moments for everybody.
If you see Paul Hayes coming, it's either really good news or really bad news.
Really bad news or really good news. Yeah, there's nothing in between. I'm afraid it's a little, But my team, they get into, you know, a lot of Web3 stuff, which we're doing now, a lot of blockchain, a lot of quantum, a lot of, stuff that I mean, I have an idea because I read Neil Stephenson in Cryptonomicon 20 years ago, and now I'm rereading it again because some of it is coming true, you know. And it's just fascinating to see. There's nothing new in the world. It's just collective terms so people can make sense of all the momentum that's happening at the moment.
How do you cut through the bullshit and don't get caught out? Because I think there's so much hype around every new wave. There's so much AI, right? At the minute, everything is AI. Jesus wept. Every single company is .AI now.
Yeah.
How do you, as a company and as a figurehead of that company, navigate through that mess and not start picking up clients kind of going, oh yeah, these would be good. And then you kind of go, well, there's nothing to them.
Yeah. It's look, there's always snake oil salesmen and there's always substance. And I can't say 100% we've always got that right. But you have an instinct because you have an understanding of the technologies that's come before, what is real and what isn't. And we tend to work with, scaling development technology companies. So, you know, I would have been in middleware for, you know, internally in a lot of companies, from Havok to Daemonware to broader technology companies. And you can tell who's building the shovels and you can tell who's kind of trying to sell the magic gold dust.
Yeah.
And working with the shovel sellers first is the safest place to be. And then you can figure out from, you know, the people that are actually striking gold with the shovels, they tend to be reference people to you.
Right.
So there's nothing new in this world. I mean, you know, AR, VR was there was AI 25 years ago. You know, cloud is just a collective term that stuck around because, you know, we were there. These are very helpful nomenclatures for great categories of things. I mean, there's AI and there's AI, right? I mean, when we grew up, AI was a much different thing. And it involved cows and horses.
Very different in Nina.
And in our home county, it's a lot more lucrative, although there are a couple of AI startups down there now. And in a way, it's just, you know, it's the environment in which you're operating in. You can't get distracted by it. You can see what's real, what's not. I had a very funny incident recently. We're down in Dogpatch at the moment, and I had a couple of kids in for transition year, and OpenAI were opening their office in Dogpatch that night. So I said, all right, I'm going to give you, one of you is going to write a press release and one of you is going to use ChatGPT. And interestingly, a lot of our clients will not, they'll actually have it in their client that or in their contracts that we cannot use generalized AI to do our PR for them because they know the large language models and whatever kind of, you know, they're too big. It's a bit unregulated. You know, it's not there for them. So they don't want it to be used and fed back to them.
Yeah.
But I got the both kids to write me a made up press release on both. And then I had, you know, one of them was great because he's obviously using it for his homework already because he put it through a humanizer, which I hadn't realized.
Really quick break to thank today's sponsor. If you've been inspired by listening to The Amazing Business Person and either want to start your own business or supercharge an existing one, then the Local Enterprise Office has something for you. Whether you want to improve your online presence, become more sustainable, get into new markets, or just get the idea off the ground, they have the support for you. For more information, check out your local enterprise office on localenterprise.ie and see how they can help your business today. Now, back to the episode.
Oh, like a filter to make it more real.
Yeah, and he was, you know, he was writing it like a, like, and he was 15 and he just had this, oh yeah, well, I'll refresh about four or five times so that it's different. Then I'll put it through a humanizer. Then I might actually use a different AI. You know, I'll use Mistral or I'll use Claude or do it. And I'm like, oh, okay. And then in the end, I was saying to both of them, well, you know, OpenAI is opening tonight. Like the CTO is over and a few more. Would you like to come to the opening? I couldn't be arsed.
Really?
Yeah. But I admired them for it. They were 15. They had other things on their mind. And off they went. But I loved that they were, you know, showing me the... And actually, the differences between the human-led one and the AI one were really interesting. Anyway, I'm going off on a path. But it was fascinating to me, you know, just to see how it's that UX UI thing, you know, how 15-year-olds are actually using it is probably how it will be used.
That's interesting. And the interface, like how are they kind of connecting with it? Like what, like, I think a lot of the growth will come from being a good interfacer.
Yeah.
It's like you with people. It's like the geniuses who can do the work of like 50 people. Just by being able to communicate with the machine.
Yeah.
I think that's a huge area of interest. Like you said, they're the 15-year-old, just natively kind of going, okay. And it's never the first version. It's always like, okay. Like VR's been coming for how long? 20 years?
Yeah.
And, you know, it's still not there.
No. And it'll be the platform. It'll be interesting to see what happens with Apple. It'll be interesting that I know from gaming, it took 40 years from Atari Pong to get to 500 million gamers, and then it took 2 years to get to 1 billion gamers, and it was the iPad and maybe the iPhone to an extent because Nebraskan housewives started
casual
playing
gaming.
Farmville
Words
with friends. Now hardcore gamers would say that's not gaming, and I go, by any definition it's gaming.
It's, you know, broader.
So
yeah,
the platform that actually, or the technology hardware platform that becomes the thing, is the thing that sets it off. I don't know that we're there yet. It's probably battery size and convenience. And
I think so. I think the day I can like just pop on the goggles, not connected to anything, and play like Call of Duty Warzone.
Yeah.
As though I'm just sitting down to watch TV. I think that's when it'll be there for me anyway. Or if I'm like going to watch TV or whatever, just shoom,
or the kids in school have something so small on their retina that their teacher doesn't know they're on it. You know, well, that's like, probably the
remember
point.
Was it Google Glass? Like how many years ago? Yeah. Maybe 10 years ago now.
I
with the little thing.
Hole. I had one.
Yeah.
But again, you're a glass hole. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, you deserve to be punched if you were walking around with a always-on eye. You know?
It's an interesting thing, though. Technology, I always think, comes like super quick, and then the adoption is like a 10-year curve.
Yeah.
It's just because technology changes, humans don't.
Exactly.
Human psychology don't. We talked about social media there, like it was a brand new thing, and people were listening going, come on, that's it's like 15, 20 years old. Yeah, but how long are humans knocking about?
Yeah.
Like, you know, our tiny brains are still like thinking about inventing fire.
Yeah.
And yet we've got this mad tool in our hands that you have every piece of information in the world in, but yet we'll still just watch videos of people falling over.
Yeah. I've been tech adjacent for a long time, and my heart, well, it doesn't break, but, you know, every time I see a technologist who's done amazing work in whatever field they're in, let's call it the Muskification, right? And then says, oh, I've solved this, therefore I can solve this. But it's a different category of thing. And you realize, no, these are just two separate category. Yeah. You know, like, I love everything Musk has done in software and hardware. I love Tesla, Starlink, SpaceX, even the solar stuff eventually. If I could just bet on him as a technologist, I'd bet on him the whole way to the moon and back.
Fully paid up fanboy.
Fully fed. Well, except on social media, I wouldn't give him the remote to the telly, because he's a technologist maximalist. He thinks maximum efficiency is the point of life. And it's not. It's all getting along with each other. And it's about, you know, it's about compromise so that large groups of people can feel bought into things. Like, the thing that would worry me the most is the Tesla truck. You know, the biggest job in America is long distance truck driver, and then taxi driver after that. But drivers generally,
yeah,
that's going away in 5 years. And so,
do you think that soon?
Oh God, yeah, yeah. Well, it's already there. Waymo is like, you know, I've been in a couple of driverless cars, and you know, when you get over it, you get over it pretty fast. And even the full self driving, which is, you know, it's bullshit now, but when enough people are using it, it won't be.
It's true. Yeah,
you know,
it's nonsense until it isn't.
It isn't, yeah. And we've got clients. Barry and Previsio, it's amazing to see what they can do, which is even more advanced, you know, yeah, on radar. And, you know, we're going to look back on giving 17-year-olds cars to drive the same way we look back on doctors, you know, endorsing brands of cigarettes. We go, we were out of our crazy minds to give a ton killer to any kid when we're basically in an accident prevention technology era. So I think, like, full self-driving, we want agency as humans. We shouldn't be calling it self-driving. This is where Musk's shortcomings are. But accident prevention technology, when that gets good enough, it is full self. Because you just want it to be in there in those moments where there is life threatened. It won't let you do it. And that's just not evenly distributed yet. That technology is there. It just needs to, how quick can we get it in the Renault Clio? You know, not the Mercedes S-Class. Anyway, to go back to the Musk thing, I can just see it. And I can see it in all sorts of areas. They think it's about, you know, it's like put Michael O'Leary in charge of the country. Yeah, but who's going to take him out after a month? Because you don't want to live under, I don't mean Michael O'Leary, I mean any, you know, great business person. Because that's not what society's about. Mm. That's about compromise and holding the center together so that the extremists at either end, left or right or up or down, don't tear us apart.
Especially now.
Especially now.
Now it feels, I was asking someone yesterday, I was like, do you think it is more more like sensationalized and polarized now, or are we just seeing it through more in social media? What do you
we're
think?
I think it's social media is not just we're seeing it, it's actually activating it. You know, you have morons who think they're citizen journalists getting out in people's faces and starting to agitate, and whoever they are, they're not, you know, where show me on the dolly where mammy didn't hug you. You know, whatever issue you've got, but you're making it out like it's a huge drama all about me. So you've got narcissism and mental health issues all rolled into one, and they seem to be the ones that get the traction because they're the idiot falling over on the ice. And that's what we're going to look for. That's what the algorithm is optimized
for. I drive past
for.
RT on the way home a lot, and you're just like every second day they're right there with the placards and there's something crazy on every single time. And you're like, lads,
and then
on.
The 80% of us that are in the center think that this is normal. And it's not. It's not what we're experiencing off social media. But the people are going, oh, well, these are influencers and this is where I need to get to. So it goes back to the old joke about Zuckerberg. It's almost quaint at this stage. You know, he just wanted girls to like him and he ended up radicalizing my grandmother and undermining Western democracy. So think about what technologists would do if they're trying to actually socially engineer. I mean, he wasn't even trying.
I always think of Hanlon's razor, right? Whenever people have been like, ultra conspiracy theory.
I've heard of Occam. I don't know about Hanlon. Hanlon. Who's he now? Is he from Nana?
Mate of mine, Niall Hanlon. It's actually his razor, but he loves it. I was golfing with him one day. I was like, do you know about Hanlon's razor? And he says, he stopped. And he's like, stop mid-swing. He's like, I don't, but tell me about it. Yeah. Hanlon's razor. Never put down to, never account something to evil that you can account to stupidity.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Or just negligence, or, you know, like the problem is these people aren't in the room. They just probably feel, oh my God, there's something going on. For them, a conspiracy theory is actually a comfort blanket because it's someone bad is in charge, the WEF or whatever. I've been in Davos. It's not that impressive. There isn't any big.
You're a big Davos head.
I've only been twice now.
Have you?
Really, all I do is stay adjacent to the IDA dinner.
God, the amount of times you put it on Twitter, there. I just feel like it's.
No, that's not me. Why would you go there? Jesus, it's one of the lesser tenants.
Sorry, you got to call it X now.
But it's always fun to be adjacent to some of those things. But there's no the bad news, good news is there's no one in charge.
The
everyone's
lizards
winging it.
Don't
the
arrive.
Lizards, I can't turn on the volcanoes anywhere. There are no lizard people. You're on your own. Everyone's kind of 15 or 20% better or worse than everyone else. Yeah. There is no one in charge. That's the real fear. And you need to let it go.
But it comes back to what we talked about. Everyone wants a narrative.
Everyone wants a narrative.
Tell me why these bad things have happened
to me.
Well,
it keeps us in business.
No reason.
Yeah.
It's just that's the way the world goes sometimes. Yeah. We talked about this on our way down to grab a coffee. Life goes in seasons.
It does go in seasons.
Sometimes it's piss and rain and you just got to put on a jacket. Sometimes the sun is starting to come out. It's a little bit warm and you're like, today's a good day.
Yeah. And also I think for entrepreneurs that I've worked with over, you know, multiple startups, it's interesting. So, you know, we've all entered a certain age now where, no one in this room, but obviously other people, where they've done a few things and now we're in the third act. And the third act's getting longer and longer, but it is the third act. And what is your identity? What is your purpose? The people who, you know, are too tied up in their identity can sometimes hit a wall and go, when they're not relevant to that own identity that they've constructed themselves, they can have problems, you know, because you realize it's not about boat drinks. You know, I thought as a young fella, it's like, I'll make my money, I'll sacrifice everything now, and I'll have a big boat and I'll have drinks on it. But if you don't have your crack as you're going along, you'll have no mates. The boat won't be as big as the next fella's. You'll have changed. You won't make it as far as the boat.
Yeah.
I had a doctor tell me recently, just don't get injured at your age. And I thought that was the best advice I ever got. He said, look, you're not going to, you know.
Just don't get injured at your age. How motivating.
I know. Well, you know, I'm available for demotivational speeches. But actually, it was the best advice you'd ever get because you can stay active. Just don't think you can now mountain bike like you used to or do the big long cycle races or do the, you know, you're not, your indoor soccer even is going to not be a good return on your investment. So my life is now paddle, plunge and Pilates. I like to do, that's my trend. I mean, I'm nothing if not trendy. I in the States it's pickleball. In Europe it's more paddle.
I do love a good bandwagon.
Yes.
I'm on the Hyrox bandwagon at the minute.
What's that now?
Hyrox, it's like new CrossFit, except it's a little bit easier, a little bit cooler. It's very much for the gram. Very cool,
right? I'm just glad I missed golf, actually, because I was a golfing orphan. My parents were gone playing golf 9 days a week, so I kind of hated golf. I think I remember vandalizing a golf course once when I was a teenager. Sorry about that. But
acting out.
Cycling was the big
thing. Mammy doesn't love me because she plays 18 holes on a Tuesday.
That's right.
Yeah.
Mammy doesn't love me.
Okay.
Me on the,
no, yeah. I love a good bandwagon. Paddle is, I'm going to Spain again this summer and paddle is my intention.
Well, also
this summer.
The sauna and plunge thing. And like for ages, clients were going, come on, we're going for a sauna. We're going for a plunge. It was a deck. It was a load of people. Now it's 5 days a week. I love it.
Really?
Now, and I live in Rat Mines, like all good Tipperary people should live, unlike you, who's coastal.
Well, you never got past that. Usually when people graduate UCD or Trinity, they're like, right, time to go to the burbs.
That's
whereas you stayed in the student lifestyle.
That's it. We started in bedsits. We moved to two-story over basements. We're going to end up in bedsits. It's the circle of and cycle of life. But up in a lane in Rathgar, I've been doing plunge. Well, there's a bit of paddle in Bushy and other places, but the plunge thing is amazing. Now, I'm never going to do plunge by itself, but if the sauna is hot enough and the plunge is hot enough, cold enough, I can do both together, and it just clears your head every morning. It's amazing. And
it's unreal. We
and
sound like peak tech dickheads now, we are self-aware that this does sound really self-indulgent.
So,
yeah, I know.
Sorry
but it's we're just bandwagon hoppers.
And also, you want to do Pilates with older people so you feel better about yourself so you can bend over a little bit more. Also, they're more crack and they have better stories. So I like to go to old Pilates, not like young Pilates. That's you just feel like a weirdo down the back.
Yeah, you're probably barred after the last time as well. So paddle, plunge and Pilates.
Yeah, a bit of swimming. Swimming and bookshops, I think, are actually my two Shangri-Las. If I can get to a bookshop, and of course the buying of books is an entirely separate pastime to the reading of books.
I'm glad we share that as well.
Yeah. Well, you're kind of storing it away that you're going to have this time on the back of your boat at some stage to be able to read the books. You're building up credits for a quieter lifestyle later that you may never get to. Mm. So maybe I'm not taking my own advice, but I would know bookshops in a lot of cities. And then if I can either get to a you know, a really good swimming spot anywhere in the world, or at least a hotel with a good swimming pool. Mm. That's half your day started well.
The place down in Athlone, you'd love it. The press up place. What's it called?
Oh, Glasson.
With the outside pool.
Yeah.
Oh, that's very much you now.
And again, the mother plays golf there. I'd be having mixed feelings about it. But yes, cool. Yeah.
Very fancy.
Anyway.
An outdoor pool in Ireland.
I know.
We've met it.
I think the only one I found here in Dublin, it was in David Lloyd up there in Riverview, but I can't afford that anymore. But
the place in Clontarf is open now, isn't it? They've a bats out there,
I think. Yeah. And then we have the bats in Dunleary, of course, which don't have bats.
I think that's so funny.
Yeah, but we do a good bit of coastal swimming. Funny, sad.
But funny. Yeah, like, yeah. We're the only probably country in the world that has, like, you know, it's surrounded by the sea, we have a bats, and it's just this concrete wasteland.
We do the big things really well, and we do the small things really terribly badly, I think. And what do I mean by that? I was on, I did the Ryanair shuffle for the Easter holidays with the kids, where we got cheap 20 quid tickets into, because I'd left it too late to book anything. So we flew into Basel and out of Trieste. And
good PR man, though, you know, kids. We're doing the Ryanair shuffle. That's ooh, right. That sounds better than going,
can't afford to go to the Canaries.
We're going to Belgium.
Yeah, everyone else is going. So we did a load of trains over the Alps, the slow trains. I've always wanted to do it.
That's my dream.
Yeah, it was lovely.
That is my dream.
Swiss trains, even Italian trains, little espresso pots at your table, play areas on the Swiss trains, no price. I mean, we can barely get a Kit Kat on Irish Rail. What the hell?
The catering was close for what, a year?
Ah, sir, look, it upsets me. But anyway, trains. I'm pro trains. And urban mobility generally. We should really get this podcast back on track. Who's in charge here?
There is no track.
Oh,
excuse the train pun. There is no track. This is just the exploration of Paul.
That's the danger.
Right. Talk to me about something you said there, because we're going to go from the very light to the very serious.
Yeah.
You talked to me, made a really interesting point, and it's been on my mind for the last kind of 6 to 9 months. I've talked to hundreds of founders now, and I always ask the question of someone who's had a liquidity event. I didn't even really know what that meant until last year.
Yeah.
They sold their company. They're really rich.
Mm.
And I always ask them the same question. What did it feel like the day after? Yeah. Oh, well, it didn't feel... I always get the same answer. Didn't feel like anything, because we had to do our earn out. We'd stay with them for 2 years until we got all our money. Mm. Cool. Okay. Fast forward 2 years. What did it feel like? And by and large, the answer is nothing.
Yeah.
And it is... breaks my little heart.
Yeah.
Breaks my little heart, because you're like going, here. This isn't meant to be a motivational podcast. This isn't meant to be like uplifting people to chase their dreams. But it's really sent me down this kind of like path, kind of similar to what you're on now, about like just exploring more about the journey right now, the seasons thing of like, you can't just keep delaying gratification. Kind of go, I'll be happy. When I get there, I'll be happy. When we do this, we'll be happy. And it's just about the day-to-day enjoyment of, how can I enjoy myself right now?
Yeah.
How can I just do the little things? Because I've spoken to so many founders, nothing. It felt like nothing. What do you think that's come from? Or why do you think that is? Because I'm sure you know a lot of the same people. Like, what is that from?
I think there's externalities and internalities. I think we're fully formed creatures by the time we're 15 or 16. We just don't know where we're going to deploy our talents. I see that with a 15-year-old son now and a 10-year-old daughter. The character is already there. So it's now what you want to expose yourself to and where do you want to get to. And again, you can't verbalize this stuff. You can only understand it in retrospect. I think the very few people change beyond that. And I don't think, you know, they say the lotto winners and the guys who go to jail, that it pretty much you revert to the mean a year later. You know, you are who you are, and all the externalities don't tend to have that much impact. It's all up here.
I think alcohol and money have the same effect.
Mm-hmm.
They make you more of what you are. If you're a prick sober, you'll be a bigger prick drunk.
Yep.
If you're a mean person and an unhappy person poor, you'd be an unhappy person rich.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. Like the people I admire the most are the ones that they were doing the right things, whether they had money or they didn't have money. And the rest of it is just, well, that was a, you know, that was just a bit of a blip on the road, be it positive or negative. And it's, you know, the people I admire are the people that are, they have a more rounded life anyway, be it family or charity or interests or friends or hobbies or travel or where it is that they want to go and what it is they want to do. And they're able to then concentrate on, you know, what it is they're trying to get through, but not to the cost of everything else.
Yeah.
And they're not, you know, the money's not going to change anything for them.
It comes back to your original point about purpose and mission, about your parents and kind of living a long, happy life. I think about that a lot. And that's why I've kind of morphed the pod more into kind of like exploring the business brain and the body, because I think it trickles downwards from the brain to the body to the business.
Yeah.
I think without the first two. And that's where I'm trying to like get more people on who have a more rounded outlook. I used to think it was all about the successful founders and the exits and the funding and all that kind of crack. And now I'm chasing a more kind of rounded, I suppose, role model. So you kind of like, for myself and for others, to kind of go, maybe this is more where we want to be going.
Yeah. Well, I hang out with a lot of people that have a lot of money, and I hang out with a lot of people that don't have that much money. And it's amazing how the lifestyle isn't that much different. Mm. Yes, you have the jets or the yachts or the whatever, but actually it just brings its own complication, or, you know, the staff and where you want to get to and how many you can only live in. You know, one bed and one pair of shoes at a time. Never skimp on either. When you're not in one, you're in the other. And then it's, who do you want to be alongside? And that generally tends to speak to your character.
Yeah.
Or, you know, what your nature is. Like, I like to mix it up with people. The people I walk with, you know, or occasionally have drinks with, you know, they're all in different sectors. They don't tend to be, there are a couple of entrepreneurs that I really enjoy just on a personal level, and you know, we only meet at conferences maybe or when we're working, but we'll always make sure that we have a personal catch up, you know, and I like going visiting them and visiting them at home and with their families and that kind of stuff, and they just become friends. It's not everyone, but you know, a lot do. And I think, you know, the people I walk with, a lot of them are at the top of their game. There's a politician, there's a chef, you know, there's a movie director, there's a, and it sounds all great, but like, I mean, faraway hills are greener because 80% of it is well manured, you know, like it's not, everyone's got the shit to drive through in their life and nothing is Shangri-La. But it's always interesting to see where those crossovers are. What are the differences and what are the same?
This
is
what I love pulling out. Yeah.
Yeah, you learn at the crossover points. You know, it's Cinderella meets Jaws. Nothing that's in parallel is usually that interesting. I think figuring out the who do you want to hang out with beyond your family? You know, who do you go to? COVID was interesting for that because you were constrained geographically or you were constrained by your bubble. So what was your bubble in COVID and who did you actually go to over and above the family? I think it was the family usually first. And then it was, okay, these people were in a, you know, in the early days were kind of scary for everyone. You know, these are the people you would default to. You either see them as good or comforting or reassuring, or they've got it together or they don't, or you can help them and they can help you. And just having that level of comfortable exposure to each other, I think, is good. And then you realize everyone's winging it, and all our job is really just to help people as best we can. Sorry, that sounds a bit Oprah-esque and kumbaya.
But that's the kind of summary I've had of the whole pod, is that no one knows what they're doing. Just embrace it.
Yeah,
you don't know what you're doing, but stop looking at Paul or Gary or Ben and kind of going, oh, look, the lads have it all figured out. Because that's where the unhappiness tends to come from.
The guy I admire the most in tech is a guy called Tom Kennedy. A lot of people might know him from his technology. He was co-founder of Hostel World with Ray Nolan. I think Ray was the technologist, you know, and Tom had a hostel. And I kind of call him the accidental entrepreneur, because he was a great entrepreneur and still is and backs a lot of people and does other things. But he started Paris to Nice, which was a great charity cycle to help out one charity first, and now it helps about 10 or 15 every year. I've done it twice. You wouldn't think it to look at me. Anyone can sign up for Paris to Nice and get it done. It is an amazing thing to do. And again, that was 10 years ago for me, but it was the right season for me to be cycling. A relief to my bike that I no longer am. But he also does Techies for Temple Street. You know, he does the amount of great stuff that he does. And
it's funny,
do it,
I don't know him, but I know
money.
All these things.
Yeah.
It's
weird.
Yeah.
And Tom doesn't, you know, ever need or want exposure, but those that know him, and he's just a great guy. And
what are the commonalities? You know, talk to me about that, because I think if I was listening to this podcast now, I'd be like, lads, go back to the commonalities, because that's the question I get asked a lot, is like, you know, what are the traits and characteristics? And I always say the same thing. Look, everyone's different. There's no playbook. Everyone's different.
Yeah.
But what commonalities do you see between all those kind of high performers you talked about earlier?
You know, I must have worked with hundreds of entrepreneurs at this stage. And there are the ones that there are some that are just, they have a tolerance of risk. They are wired differently. Some of them, not all. And they just don't see it. They see the risk of doing nothing as a bigger risk than doing something. Or doing nothing, sorry. Whatever way that is, makes sense.
That's the greatest risk in life, is to do nothing.
Yeah, right. But and it would, you know, they're just wired that way, and that's what they need to do, and they have a tolerance of it, and they just want to get out there and they want to make this impact because it's there. Then I think there's a kind of a subset of people, I would say like myself, that are entrepreneurially adjacent. They might have businesses, but they're not, they're doing it within guide rails. You know, they're lawyers or they're accountants or they're, there is a set way of doing it, and they might iterate 15% differently or a little more efficiently or where you get to. And then you've got 80% of people that just want a job and they could be well happier. And that's, you know, where they should be. So it's a bit reductive to it. But when you get out to the people that are inventing a category of thing that doesn't exist, they do tend to be wired differently. Mm-hmm. It would hurt them not to fix it. And they want to fix it. And it's amazing if they can marry an actual business with that burning drive inside them. It's get out of their way, help them if you can. It's great to see it. Sometimes they can go off the rails a little bit where they go, and now I'm going to fix everything. Mm-hmm. And they realize, you know, they think it's all about, you know, it's, I'm going to maximize efficiency here, and health outcomes are going to be 22%. Better in my country afterwards. And
well, to the man with the hammer, everything is a nail, right?
Yeah, right. And then the problem is that, you know, the people are storming the Bastille because they've lost their jobs and they're going, well, why aren't you happy? It goes back to the Musk thing of, you know, creative disruption is amazing. And, you know, we should have more and more of it, but you have to have cognizance of second order effects. Now, philosophers and logisticians, they don't even know what second and third order effects are. So it's unfair to put it on the technologists. You know, we all don't know, you know, like we were promised flying cars and whatever. Now we have just all knowledge in our pockets. You know, knowledge has accelerated much faster. And when quantum kicks in and whatever else is out there that's about to kick in, it's going to be amazing, but there are societal consequences that we can't fix in a way, and we need politicians and we need sociologists to help us figure that out, to make sure there's meaning for everyone else there, or there's a sense of worth, or there's a universal income. I mean, that's really where we could be heading for.
It would seem that way.
Well, you know, it's too big a thing for my brain, but, you know, half the world is voting this year. I'd prefer if AI wasn't coming into its own right now. In India, in Malaysia, in America, here, maybe. again, and I think we've got an advanced democracy and proportional representation. It's fantastic. And I think we're blessed by some of the politicians we have. We just, the edges of the boat are being rocked constantly by asymmetric disinformation.
Yeah, I think you summed it up lovely earlier. There's probably about 10 to 15% of radicals, and they seem to be like so noisy that the 80, 85% are kind of in the middle, kind of like their eyes are going left and right going, what the hell's going on?
And even some of those radicals are progressive in the sense of that they help us to get to places, be it in business or socially or where we need to get to. The problem is that if you go too far in one way, you've seen it in countries. You can see it in media in the States. You can see it in Hungary. You can see it in and left and right and up and down. But it's it was funny. Some of the technologists I really admired, Des Trainer and Intercom, was down at Kilconomics with Bobby and a few others. And they were saying, well, you know, you can try and regulate and put pop-ups in, but that's not going to do it. If it's illegal, make it illegal. Don't just try and regulate after the, you know, close the gate after the bull has already run out. You know, Big Handbag is the largest company in Europe is LVMH, right? So how do we regulate that? And I prefer that to be regulated before we have to buy any more $5,000 handbags. But anyway, that's kind of off the point. The real point is it's almost impossible to regulate things that haven't settled yet,
yeah,
because it moves so fast. So, you know, the big thing of Chinese versus, we had some stuff with Huawei and with BYD and with TikTok and with whatever. I mean, I know that people go, oh, you know, Chinese are going to have influence on us and whatever. It's a chaos system out there. They have no more influence over it than the American government runs Twitter or WhatsApp.
That's how I always wonder, right? Because I read stuff and I read all these big things about they're spying on everything, and every word you say and every WhatsApp you send and every tweet you do, you know, they know all that and they're parsing it all and they're using it and they're building information on all of us. So it's like, purely from a logistics and manpower point of view, how would that be possible? And what would they give a shit about me sending a funny meme to you?
Yeah, but I don't think you can take it at the individual level. I think you take it as the collective society. Disinformation can definitely, you know, tip the balance. There are Russian and Chinese, and I don't even mean to be nationalistic about it. There are just chaos monkeys, anarchists out there that like to destabilize countries. And so you can put stuff out there in the ether. It can sometimes boomerang back on them. You know, it's not a, it's not that the Politburo or the Chinese People's Army is looking at where you're driving in your car and what funny memes you're looking at. You know, the real danger is nobody cares. But they can destabilize stuff through, you know, you can see a lot of the right-wing nationalist stuff. And here, we're not that big a country, but you can even see it here. And it's almost certainly coming from
Well, you saw the riots that happened there, what, three, 4 months ago? No, November?
Yeah.
Crazy. Mad stuff. Stoked up through that.
Oh yeah.
Well, you know yourself from being in the media game, like fear and misery sell.
Yeah.
They and drive clicks. They drive attention. You know, even if it's an isolated incident, it gets people.
And,
click.
And Micheál Martin said the most important thing here, and he's a politician I admire. You know, we need a strong RTE. We need a strong Virgin Media. We need a strong media that can actually, at least, give us the facts so that we can make decisions. It's a dangerous time to have destabilized, decentralized. I mean, there are smarter people than me. We worked a lot with Áine Kerr and Mark Little on their various media play.
Incredible people.
Yeah, companies. And, you know, there's nothing journalists like more than talking about the future of journalistic platforms. But it's really interesting in terms of how information from a peer-to-peer, you know, platforms are being dispersed, and they obviously went to Spotify because they could see that there was a burning need to try and fix some of those platforms. And that's not a burning platform, but there are others. Anyway, yeah.
It's fascinating, though. I think it is good to have these big kind of open conversations because it's sometimes really hard to understand what's going on.
Yep.
Sometimes I like, the more I read, the less I know.
Yeah.
You know, and it is very confusing. And that's why I agree with you there. I do think we need... Because, you know, you used to kind of like look at the Irish Times or the New York Times and go, that's 100% correct. And now you're like, oh, well, maybe it is, maybe it isn't. Yeah, and there's so much kind of like politicizing of like RTE and stuff now. You're kind of going, oh, we do need kind of like media's at a funny spot, I think.
Yeah. Media literacy, though, is both high and, you know, a lot of the kids are going, well, yeah, but I can see where that's coming from, or I can't see where it's coming from, or just being aware of it. I think there are good initiatives that are going to eventually, like, we're all just trying to build a system where we can all live together in a compromised yet positive and straightforward way. And I believe in the inherent goodness of people generally. There are bad actors and we can either regulate them out or jail them out.
Yeah, I agree. I think they're like the majority of people mean well. The majority of people just want to have a happy life, want to, like, you know, have a good income, have a couple of holidays, enjoy the kids. Have a good time. That's the majority of people. Whereas there's, you know, it's not everyone's out to get you. Hanlon's a razor. Take that with you today.
Yeah, yeah, indeed. You know, going back to the entrepreneurialism, I started a few things like Flounders for Failed Founders, and then the Ryan Academy, Jack Ryan's thing, they saw it and thought, well, this is great fun, but you need to start, you know, proper kind of postmortems on where businesses went wrong. Because the problem in the area we work in, which is generally venture-backed, high growth technology companies, most of them are going to fail. It's an experiment, you know, and it's hard for the individuals when they do fail. So even though there's a lot of kind of patronizing stuff talked about failure, I really felt I wanted people to be able to move on. So we did startup wakes through the Ryan Academy first and moved it around the world as well, where we would bury dead startups. Now, it kind of got out of hand with coffins and me dressed as a priest and all sorts of interesting people, but it was basically a way to have people talk about what went wrong generally and be able to move on, because, you know, let's
put it in
a drawer.
It's the most requested topic I get.
Yeah.
I'm like, I hear you, I get you, but most people don't want to come on straight after the fact. They want to have their time to grieve. It is a grieving process. They want to have time to grieve, and then they want the mood music to have changed, and they want to be on the upward swing of, and here's my new thing.
They're on the next thing.
And I get it. Like, people want to hear, talk to me more about failure. I'm like, I try my best to get that out of people. But it's very, you have to be sensitive of it. And at times people won't talk about it.
It's psychologically difficult for everybody because, again, identity can be brought into it. And I like the idea of either physically or allegorically burning the business plan. Like, it's just done. Let's put it in a drawer and forget about it because you need to move on. Mm. And now, I always say 90% of companies are going to fail. But you as a as a founder or as a co-founder or as a CTO or CMO or whoever it is you are in those companies, you won't. You'll always benefit from having been in there. And when you see the great Irish success stories, we work with companies all over the world, and some of them, you know, don't even know that we're in Ireland. You know, we're doing stuff in Asia. A lot of it is American, British, European, and Irish out. But you know, they want the best CV for people is, I've done my own startup, but it didn't work out. But I know why. I have a self awareness. So you've wasted.
I know why is the key part money. There. Yeah, I know why. I say this all the time. It's kind of a learning. I've kind of like crystallized over the last kind of 6 to 9 months. It's only failure if you stop.
Yeah. Don't stop, it's not failure. I don't read many business books because I find they're kind of, firstly, I find that their magazine articles just stretched out, and you could have done this in 5 pages in the New Yorker, the Atlantic, or the Economist. And a lot of time I'm reading books realizing I've read this as its original, you know, thing that
this
got stretched
out. This is a 10,000 word long article.
Yeah, and it's sui generis in the sense that your success is probably particular to you. You got the timing right. You didn't even realize the timing was right. You know, there was search before Google. There was house sharing before Airbnb. It was a consumer tipping point. You happen to iterate 15 or 20% better. Usually it's the timing, or someone has
decided. The good ones always say it's luck. Like, yeah. And they're absolute killers in execution. There's a huge, that's exactly. Right. They get luck. But the other key thing, which we don't really talk about too much, is they recognize the luck.
Yeah.
They go, oh, it's happening. Bang. Drop everything and go 110% at it. It's been able to kind of like sniff the air and go, things are changing. There's something happening. And that comes, I think, with when I talk to serial founders, the difference between talking to a first-time founder and a serial founder is immense.
Yeah.
Looking up last season, we had so many second and third time founders on. It's just a whole different conversation.
Yeah. And I think it comes as well from, you know, we see the outliers, you know, the Zuckerbergs or the Brian Chesky's or the whatever, but mostly they're older and they aren't the ones, you know, the startup founders are flailing around looking for product market fit, to use that old cliche. And their job is to find the new thing. The people who can then maximize efficiency, iterate better, they don't tend to be the same people. That is why there are exits. I mean, the reason is, you know, the VCs back them to go get it to this stage and then give it to an industrialist, you know, that can maximize.
Get it 0 to 1 and then give it to the adults to bring it from 1 to 10.
Yeah. And it's not that interesting from, you know, 2 to 10.
And most founders lose interest. Yeah, they kind of go, oh, this isn't kind of my thing.
Yeah.
Great friend of the pod, good friend of yours, Connor Murphy. He was probably summed it up better than anyone. He's like, yeah, so here's why DataHook failed. Here's what I learned. Here's what I'm doing differently. And I was like, he was the first person to come on that just packaged it up in such a beautiful way. Yeah. You can see he clearly thought through everything. And he was like, bump, 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 bump. Didn't hide away from it, just said it as it was. Yeah. And you can see, you can just look at Bridge now and go, the minute he said that, I'm like, Bridge will be a success.
Yeah, I'm a very small investor in Bridge, but I'm an investor in him because I think he's great.
Oh, yeah. The minute you, like, I speak to a lot of founders, and sometimes you're like, I really like you. I hate the idea. Yeah. I said, but I wish I could like buy shares in you.
Yeah.
After the fact, I'm kind of thinking, going, oh, their next one's going to be a banger.
Yeah.
You know,
cause it's like, even like, it's going back to Musk. I would buy a share in Musk if I could, you know, and I'm sure you can. There must be an index that basically tracks like an S&P for Musk.
The Musk index.
Everything except X or Twitter or whatever, you know, burning cesspit that it is now.
But isn't it so interesting that the whole kind of, you know, trying to apply success to everything, you think if they're successful at once, that new book was immense and immensely sad.
Yeah.
What a wild life.
Yeah.
What, and we look at them and we put them up on a pedestal and you kind of, but inherently you look at the personal life, you kind of go, that's...
I gave him 50 tragic. Quid once years ago when he was in Dublin so he could go to Coppers. I think he got himself in trouble over there. Never paid me back either. But anyway, still a fan.
Clip that, put that on TikTok and at Elon Musk.
We'll do a different version.
You owe 50 quid to Paul Hayes.
That's right. I'd say it keeps him awake at night.
As long as that gets him activated on X, we'll be grand. Elon and Coppers. Yeah, that was a famous Twitter thread back in the day. Let's do our rapid fire round before you get in trouble.
To do the rapid.
You can take a quick, get a bit of water in there.
Sorry, I felt like I didn't talk about the business or anything.
No, you talked about loads. Okay. Talked about life and philosophy and everything. What book would you recommend every entrepreneur must read?
I'm rereading Cryptonomicon by Neal Stephenson, which is sci-fi from 22 years ago now, because a lot of what he's predicted is now coming to pass. And I don't really read business books because I think they're their own category of thing. They were successful for that one reason. You can't just emulate a business book. So I would say read as broadly as you can in as many different genres as you can.
Right book at the right time. That's what I always say. People are like, because obviously we've got hundreds of recommendations. And I'm like, what are you trying to solve? Or what are you working on right now? And I'll recommend a book then. Because otherwise I was like, if you want to read for fun, read these five. If you want to read to solve a problem, tell me what the problem is. What's the biggest thing you've learned about yourself since starting the business?
On a personal level, I know that I'm creative and entertaining, and I can see things that other people can't see in terms of how they should communicate about themselves. But actually, it was to hire people, not that are smarter than me, but that know more things about other sectors, you know, what their sideline is. I work with an amazing amount of young people that I would be happy to work for. So I see them not as a young version of me. They're all very different and very diverse. It's that I would be happy to work for them. I'm interested enough in them.
That's a really good answer. I like that. I don't think people look at it that way, and they should. What would you do today if I give you 10 million euro?
I wouldn't be trusted with money. Like Tommy Tiernan said, money doesn't suit us. So I'd give it to my wife to disperse the funds. I think I would back a lot of young people in whatever it is they know. The young scientists, if I had a time machine, I'd go back and I'd invest in the young scientists from the last 15 years up.
That was my tweet last year. I said, I'm starting a new fund. Whoever wants to get involved, all we're going to do is write a check to the winner of the Young Scientist every year.
Well, I had a weird thing where my girlfriend, when I was 15, her and her friend won the Young Scientist. And then I went out with the daughter of the founder of the Young Scientist, Tony Scott. God bless him. He's a legend. And I should have been paying more attention to the winners rather than, you know, the people there. But if you look at it, I met, there was a girl who I think was from TIP, maybe, and she ended up in Activision as a programmer, and she won the Young Scientist. And then, of course, it went through the Collisons, and then Shane Kern from Evervault.
It's incredible.
So many more. And it used to be you collected a trophy and off you went. Now it's you go to Silicon Valley and you collect 30 million in a wheelbarrow and come home with it. And rightly so, ever since probably the Collisons, in fairness. Tipperary men, as we both know, because Drumadier
Limerick
has not yet been annexed. Yeah, they went
Limerick
to school in Limerick, in fairness, but no, they can't have them.
It's a tip. They're 100% a tip.
Yeah.
What's something in your daily routine you wish you started sooner?
Again, there's a season for everything. I wish I'd started cycling sooner. I wish I'd played indoor soccer a little later. I wish, you know, probably the swimming, the saunas, the plunges, all that cliched stuff. I just find it brilliant for mental health. But walking meetings, I'm at the stage now where I can actually insist on walking meetings. And we have the technology where we can transcribe and they're actually productive because it's where you can be productive.
Nice. Okay. I'm going to give you 1 million euro. You can only invest in one company or person. Who are you picking?
I think I'm picking the Musk index. I think from Tesla to Starlink to SpaceX to even solar power, or whatever he calls that thing, everything except X. That needs to be taken away from him. But everything else, I think there's a 10X coming on all of that together, because you can just see. He can see where the lines are going to join up in terms of energy and communication and transport and everything else that they're building. That's just going to change beyond any other company I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. So if there's an Uber brand for him, with the caveat that I wouldn't give him the remote to the telly when it comes to social media, that is a different kettle of fish. That's more like societal, and he shouldn't be anywhere near it.
Yeah, I think he even knows that was a mistake himself. If you only invest in one company or person, who would that be?
I would give it to my wife. She was 25 years in RTE, and she has an idea to help kids in transition year to, you know, I call it sneaky vegetables, train them as presenters so that they actually get more confidence early on in dealing with people and presenting. Not everyone's going to be a presenter or radio or TV, but giving them that. I deal with a lot of American students through a scholarship program, and they're just brilliant at that in a way that Irish kids aren't. So I would do that. Or my real fantasy would be to set up pub camp, where kids are sent not just to the Gaeltacht, which is brilliant, but to pubs around the country to work in pubs as 14, 15 and 16 year olds and revitalize rural towns. And it's good for them. Pub camp.
Definitely. Yeah, that would be an interesting one to float now in the modern world. What do you believe that other people would strongly disagree with or find strange?
I don't think Elon Musk is going to get us to Mars, but I think everything else he's doing is actually going to really help the planet. From Starlink to SpaceX to Tesla, to Solar Wall. I think he's actually the ones that are, I think we're going to iterate and innovate our way out of the problems, the ultimate problem that the planet is looking at in terms of climate change. And so I would back the Musk index. I just wouldn't back him on social media. That's the difference. You know, that's societal. And that has second order effects that nobody can control. The greatest philosophers, the greatest politicians, the greatest sociologists don't know what the second and third order effects are. I go back to that old joke about Zuckerberg. You know, he just wanted girls to like him. And now he's radicalized my grandmother and undermined Western democracy. But he wasn't trying to do anything bad. When you try to get in and pull on those levers, you realize how complex life is beyond technology, beyond business. And it's not somewhere he should be playing.
Knowing when to stop is key. What is the one thing you spend money on in your life that makes you happy?
Books and travel. I'm very familiar with a lot of bookshops from Rathmines to San Francisco. And so if I can spend money on books and pass them down, and I will not throw out my books, and I'm building a bigger wall for my books, not quite a library, but no one knows why I won't get rid of them, but I they're like my kids. And then travel, and it's not high-end travel, although I'm willing to be adjacent on anyone's private jet or yacht that wants me. It's more where are the interesting places to swim, to meet people, to experience new types of food, and just the space to be able to think. So
even the Ryanair shuffle thing, I've been thinking about that since you mentioned it, like flying into one place, then in the train all across Europe to another. I love that idea.
I like, and look, I think we'll eventually innovate our way to electric airlines and,
If Deck Ryan gets his way, we will.
Well, yeah,
Deck's
exactly.
on it, so
yeah,
I think it'll be okay.
Yeah. All they are is big drones. Don't tell Bobby that, but they are. And I think, happiness for me is a 20 quid flight into an obscure place and out of another obscure place. As everyone is arriving for their cookie cutter weekend, you're already leaving it, and you've been on a train and you've had a good book and you're surrounded by friends or family. And it's the unknown of where we're going to eat, stay, play. But you know you're going to end up with interesting stories. I mean, we went from Basel via Bern over the Alps on slow trains and ended up in Trieste, where it turns out there's a bigger James Joyce industry than there is here. Seemingly, he never paid for an apartment in Trieste, even though he lived in about 22 of them. But the grandchildren are now making out like bandits. So if James Joyce stiffed you on a rental payment 100 years ago, you are now a rich person in Trieste.
Stamp that plaque on and away you go.
There's about 15 different places where he stayed. I think he was working as a translator for Berlitz and he just never got paid, and so he couldn't pay it up. And it's great to see the industries that can come from places like that. And I think a lot of entrepreneurs, it's when they travel and go, if I could do this in a different environment, with a different spend, with a different thing.
Again, that's why travel is so important. The internet's great. You can learn a lot, but being there and physically seeing it kind of just activates something different in your brain.
There are no new ideas. There's only a 15% better combination or iteration. So go for it. And you're going to find that in other places. When your brain is in relax mode, that's when it's going to find those things, not when it's in, I've got 22 things to see and I can't observe.
Now, when you're trying to get through your inbox, what's your final piece of advice for every founder or aspiring founder listening?
Don't wait for boat drinks. Don't wait for the end goal. You know, if you're not enjoying the journey as you go along, you'll have changed, or the end goal will have changed, or you'll have put the things in your life that are so important out of it by then. The people I really admire are the ones that are, have great time for their families, have great time for their friends, and realize that it's not about some big, hairy financial goal at the end or the most toys accumulated. It's, are they living a great life now, whether they have the means or not? And so don't defer anything for some. There's a great way of putting it as well, that, nothing's worth giving up now that's worth two extra years in a home somewhere. It's a bit trite, but it is that. And the other thing is, people remember, I think I stole this from Maya Angelou or somewhere. I like stealing things from people, the more noble they are. People remember how you make them feel. They remember very little of what you've actually said. It's the feeling of how you were when you were with them. And never underestimate that.
Beautiful. What a way to end. Nice. Paul, where can people learn more about you and Beach Hut?
BeachHutPR.com. It's my team that do everything. And if you need therapy, you can follow me on Twitter. But I would go to the team first. So
go to the professionals, and if it's something else you need, go to Paul.
Yeah, and you'll see us at every event globally that you'd want to be at, and in whatever sector you're going to be at. But you, and you can find us down at the back of Dogpatch Labs right now.
Lovely, Paul. That was an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Gary.
Thanks for watching. Hope you enjoyed that one. If you did, do me two quick favors. Hit like on the video and leave a quick comment. It really helps the channel to grow, especially when it's a small channel like this. If you enjoyed that kind of content, click here to subscribe so you never miss an episode, and click here to watch a brand new video right now. I'll see you back here next time.